Hello, this is Marcy Schuler with 307 Net Radio, and we're here today with Charles Oskey, the Superintendent of Schools for Johnson County School District Number 1. What is happening in the schools?
Well, first of all, good morning and excited for our weekly interview. So this is super excited to talk about what's happening. So what's happening? We are getting into the routine of school. Activities are up and running. We are already at state golf, so state golf is being held this weekend here in Buffalo. But just activities are up and running, so schools are busy all the way from the kindergarten room, classroom all the way through the seniors. So it's kind of exciting to starting to get into that piece. And frankly, we're mid-September. I have no idea where time is going, but we have some great admin meetings. We're starting to prep for our next PD.
What's a PD?
Professional development schedule. So that is October 10th. So really excited about that. That's going to be one of those collaborative community trainings. Our first part of the day with our staff will be with what I call drug identification and what's happening in our communities. It's going to be provided through local law enforcement for all of our staff. And then we're going to have a guest speaker that's going to really tie into some of our goals. But Josh is going to be here to talk to our districts about be their hero. So that's kind of that social, emotional, how do we support kids? How do we support each other? That's going to go from 9 till noon that day. Then we're going to have teachers in their classroom, and then the building administrative team is going to really focus on their next part with what we call professional learning communities, or PLCs, in our buildings. And a PLC is a term that's thrown around a lot, and some people might call it a staff meeting, but PLCs have been shown time after time, if done correctly, it strengthens culture in schools. There's a strong correlation between improving student performance and community collaboration. So PLCs is about a team of teachers coming together frequently to look at where students are performing, how to meet their needs, how to identify those, and how do we lead that. So what we are in a transition is, most people say we do PLCs, but that's really called a PLC light. So the district focus for the next 3 years is really to get Solution Tree to come in. We become resident experts of what a true PLC is based around and how we can actually develop that into something that's a culture that will continue and not an expectation, but something we believe in. So
PLC is Professional Learning Community.
Yes.
So is that teachers working together to teach? What does that exactly mean?
Absolutely. So it's teachers coming together. So a grade level band coming together, looking at where students are performing, where their struggles might be, using them as resources among. So one teacher says, hey, try this. This is what we're doing. And so it's actually just encompassing the strengths of everybody coming together and having more than one person look at the data. But it's about kids. And so it really holds each other accountable. It allows teachers, we call them teacher leaders. It starts to develop those. It starts to develop confidence in what they're doing. It keeps a focus. So we're not just based on, hey, we started the school year, now this is where the kids are at the end of semester, and maybe what should have we have done? This is done on a weekly basis. So these teams come together. They make sure they're headed down the right track. They're looking at student performance. And education has changed. And when anybody says, oh, you just go to class, no, these teachers are putting in a lot of time and effort, and PLCs are not easy. I want to be very clear. It's going to require a lot of time and effort, and we have some amazing people that want to do that. So I need the community to hear that. We've got teachers that want to do what's best for kids, and just the term PLC, or professional learning communities, doesn't mean we're just going to come together and have coffee. We're going to talk about kids. We're going to have hard conversations, and we're going to take that back to the classroom to do what's needed for kids.
Wonderful. So that's October 10th. So there'll be no school that day.
Yes.
And so let's go back a little bit. You talked about the morning part of that day, and that there'll be a talk about drugs in the community. And can you give us a little more about what that's about, or do you even know?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things happening. So through our partnerships, through that partnership with local law enforcement, is really starting to understand what is out in our community, so we can identify and we can support kids. So there's a lot of things happening, unfortunately. I'll be honest with you. The different types of drugs that are coming into our community, how they impact kids, what they're coming in as, whether it's a gummy bear or whether it looks like Tylenol. We just need to be well informed so that we know what we're looking for, so we can identify and be proactive rather than reactive, and be on the same page with local law enforcement. So the most exciting thing is we are using our local resources, our local law enforcement, to help us kind of identify what's unique to Johnson County and Buffalo and KC, so we can do what's best for kids and the community. So that will be a training that's going to happen, and this is through that collaboration with local law enforcement. And then we're going to bring in another guest speaker, which really ties into that every kid needs a champion. I talked about be their hero. Kids and teachers need somebody to rely on. And, you know, not only do kids and teachers and community members, there's just a lot of things going on. So the more we can realize how we take care of each other, that communication piece, and we have to be that standard level of care. We're kind of parents for, you know, we oversee their kids for 8 hours. There's a lot of things happening. So, but teachers also have a lot of things happening in their lives. So just this balance of reassuring not only teachers that we're here for them, and then they're reassuring kids that this is a safe place to be, that creates that culture within the community. So it's baby steps in the right direction. You know, the PLC, the professional learning communities, ties right into that. Our other focus of changing our Danielson evaluation model from just an evaluation to more of a growth model. This is effective teaching. Okay, how can we improve our skills? Are all part of the baby steps that we're moving forward with. So have we been doing PLCs to a certain level, but we're just going to get better at it. So we just need to become masters of our our skill sets. Mm-hmm. We need to take advantage of the different talents throughout the district when we can. And so that's what's exciting. So
we have had extraordinary educators in Johnson County since I've known Johnson County, and that's a long time. We're just excited to hear your excitement for your staff and your trainings. Will parents ever be able to hear some of that drug talk? You know, would that be recorded anywhere, or is that really just a kind of a private training for teachers?
No. Eventually, once we get into that, we can offer that through the community. But this is kind of my lead way to talk about the right ride. So there's going to be a lot of things happening there.
Road.
And
the right road.
The right road, sorry. The right road. There's a parent meeting the night before, so I'm pretty sure it's on the 27th. So that's a great opportunity for parents. It's I've asked them to make sure that's for K-12 parents. We'll push that out. So that's the promotion of where we're headed with that. Getting parents involved. But as we know more, then we can educate parents. We can maybe have some of those conversations as a community level. But I guess your overall answer is yes.
Great. That parent meeting will put out more information. I believe that's at 6:30 the night before at Buffalo High School Auditorium.
That is correct.
And the Right Road is, a great program, and sophomores and juniors will be part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I attended the meeting the other night there at the library. You know, the most exciting thing, this is good for kids, but that room was packed with people that want to help. The volunteers and how this community rallies around what's best for kids gets me super excited. So when we talk about, she started out with that introduction, you want something done, invite the people that are the busiest to get things done. And that room was full of busy people that are willing to take the time to do this program. And I was in awe. It is a full day of a lot of volunteers doing a lot of great things for kids. are going to be exhausted. They better be prepared because it will be a very emotional day, but a really an exciting day. To see adults and organizations come together and put this all in play is, what makes me excited to be in Johnson County.
Yes, and just to back up a little bit, the Right Road is the new name for Johnson County's version of Freshman Impact.
Yep.
Yes, and Lisa Norman is leading that. She's still looking for a few volunteers, too, so if people are interested in volunteering, they can contact Lisa Norman. We'll have a 307, we'll be covering it, and so we'll have a lot of information on 307 at radio on that. You've also got something going on. We've got Hot Topics in education.
So not only the job of the superintendent is just is making sure everything is good in Johnson County, is understanding where we're at the state level. So good opportunity for me to kind of talk about the Joint Education Committee, or as I referenced, the JEC had a meeting. And so there were some key topics coming out of this committee getting ready for legislation. And first one I want to talk about a little bit is this K-3 literacy. And I want to be very transparent in saying this. There's verbiage out there that say our kids are not reading, and I completely disagree. What our elementary and what our teachers are doing to get kids ready for a state assessment is phenomenal. Now, is every kid reading at every grade at grade level? I'm going to say the answer is no, but are we headed in the right direction? Are we identifying kids through what we just talked about, through PLCs? Have our teachers been doing trainings? Absolutely. So whether it's Fontes Spinell, Balanced Literacy, the new letters training, we're doing a lot of things already. So when legislation is, when people are talking about kids can't read, I disagree. Kids might not be at grade level, but kids are growing. We're coming out of a pandemic. You're going to start seeing that with state scores. They're down a little bit. Kids have been virtual. However, it doesn't mean we haven't been doing our jobs or continuing to train. We are on top of it, and you will see that. If you have an opportunity to go visit any of our elementary schools or KC, you can see teachers and principals have identified those, and I know they have because they've come to me and said, Charles, we need this. And I say, well, we don't have the money, so how can we do this? And how can we leverage federal funds to do those things? So they're fighting for their schools and for their kids because they know there's areas that we need to work on. So that's exciting. So when legislators say, hey, kids are not reading, I disagree. The other part that I think is a hot topic is there's a potential of legislation to come out that says you have to have so many hours of professional development for teachers starting July 1st, and they won't count anything prior to that. And I just want this community to know, and actually I want the state to know, our teachers go above and beyond. We continue to do professional development. So to say that we haven't been providing hours, I'm going to give you a classic example. Our teachers right now, just in the current letter training over the last year, have put in over 90 hours just in this training, outside their contracted hours, just to get through this letters training. So when we say that nobody's doing training, that's crazy talk. Every day, whether it's PLCs or everything that we're implementing at the district level, there's a lot of professional development. And schools do that. Teachers go above and beyond. And I just need to reassure community members and stakeholders that that's in addition to teaching. And I have a true passion for all teachers, but I really encourage anybody who has never been to an elementary classroom, not for 5 minutes, but go spend an entire day. It's a very busy group. And so staying on top of them when their attention spans are 30 seconds to 40 seconds and still continuing to focus on where they are and making sure that we're meeting the expectations. We got curriculum, we got standards we have to teach to, but we also have to take care of the kids. So there's a lot happening. So I just want to reassure everybody that when you hear that teachers aren't doing anything or there's no professional development happening, I can clearly defend that at any point in time. I can show you our new district level PD plan and show you that there's lots of professional development. So
That's very reassuring and actually just very logical. Of course our teachers are learning and doing.
Every day. And again, I just have to reiterate, we've got to start promoting the value of education so that people go into the business. And I think teachers most of all just want to hear, hey, we're thankful for what's happening. And I get it. There are majority of teachers that are there. There are some that we look at and we want to grow them. But to put an overall stamp on education as not performing well is very unfair.
So we did talk last time about the different schools besides Johnson County School District number 1 in our area. What about charter schools? Did you talk about that at the superintendent?
We did, group? And so that's a great that is a topic, and I think there's some misperception there that charter schools is a push, and you know, funding for a child should be able to follow it, and it's not going to add an increase to state funding. And I want to challenge that. It is going to increase the cost of funding. So when you create charter schools, you might get 2 kids from each class, but there's a misperception that if a district's average student ADM is $15,000 per student, that $15,000 travels with them. Though that's not the case. It's based on ADM, but it's also based on class sizes, so you get a teacher.
Can you tell us what ADM means?
Average daily membership. So it's basically number of students in your school. So thanks for asking. doesn't mean that $15,000 is going to travel with them. That means that you might still be funded as a district for that certain level of teachers. However, when that child goes to the charter school, that's going to create another additional funding for the charter schools. When you start charter schools, it's double funding for the first year. You have to create funding for administration. You have to create money for lights, buildings. You increase, there's just a lot of square footage or other things for renting of facilities, that insurance piece. So it's not a wash. And I think that's the perception. It's not going to cost more money to the taxpayers or to and there will be an additional cost. And I think those are things we're going to start to see with the next couple of meetings, is really identifying there is, in my mind, an extraordinary cost. Because we hear from this right now, education costs are too high. We're too much funding's going into education. And that's a false statement. So, I haven't really followed where we're at with the WA lawsuit, with, not following statute with how we're funding schools. But those are things that will be coming up here again in the next month or two. So, yeah, those are some hot topics. And charter schools are having an opportunity for parents of school of choice. I'm not speaking against that at all. Parents have a right. We as a public school want to make sure our schools are efficient. What I'm talking about is the misinformation that there's not going to be a cost increase to providing charter schools in the state of Wyoming, because there will be an increased cost.
So is there a movement in Johnson County to create a charter school, or is this more of a statewide?
This is more of a state legislative conversation. There's some conversations with some very small schools in Wyoming right now that are going to be the test protocol that will actually shut down a school. So you have a small rural school that wants to convert, so then the public school will have 0 kids in it, which causes a financial thing within the community. So there's a couple things that we'll look at and kind of observe as we move forward with what this legislation looks like. You know, that brings up the talk of consolidation, which I've been a part of for a long time. Do you consolidate small schools, school districts? Do you create a charter school? And those type of things. So there's a lot of great questions happening at this point in time. But just being as honest with we can to our stakeholders, the one topic we talked about is there is an increased cost to charter schools in Wyoming.
Well, thank you. We have talked about a lot of subjects today. We've talked about hot topics going on in the Superintendents Association. We've talked about staff education and professional learning communities, and October 10th, the professional development, September 28th, the right road. What have I not asked you today?
So I think the other thing I want to get excited about is the School Boards Association, also on the 28th, is a very full day. We're going to have all potential candidates that are running for boards, both in Johnson and Sheridan County. They had the one in Sheridan this last week, and we're having the one here on the 28th here at the district office for the School Boards Association to kind of talk about the roles of school board members, and a very informative meeting, so I'd encourage people to come to that. But again, that's a huge collaboration between Johnson and Sheridan County, you know, trying to really be proactive. Boards are essential to effective school districts, and understanding it's a tough job. I mean, I have a lot of respect for board members that sit on any board, but on a school district, it's a lot of time. It's an unpaid position. Some very hard decisions have to be made. You know, it talks about policy and procedures and all that. There's leadership governance. And when we come into some of the challenges that I've outlined before, you know, developing and sustaining a budget, we have 2 years to do that. We're right now, because of our loss of ADM of 1,300 to 1,200, we have a $1.2 million deficit. We have some other things that we're kind of straightening out, but we're putting a good team together here. In the last 13 months that I've been here, I'm excited about that. We'll kind of see where it goes. But when you talk about effective districts, the districts, you look at it, it starts at the board level. So I'm excited about the candidates that want to be a part of that. And I think we're going to continue to move in the right direction. And there's such a thing as effective districts that have, you know, they either have blue ribbon schools, they're PLC districts, professional learning communities. Their boards are heavily engaged in professional learning communities. So there are professional learning communities for boards, and how you work and collaborate together and understand that. It's kind of a parallels leadership governance. It parallels a lot of things. So it really is exciting to see we have people that are interested in being on the board. And I think they're going to be surprised, hopefully excited, but there's a lot of things happening in Johnson County.
So that's for board member candidates on September 28th at 6:30,
yes.
What time?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock at the School District Administration Building in the boardroom. And that's a training from the School Boards Association.
Yep. So, so our regional rep, who is a board member in Sheridan too, is help organizing that. And again, it was just specific for Johnson and Sheridan. We're starting to do more collaborative things with those communities. So all those things are exciting. They're not where Charles wants them to be, but the thing is we're continuing to take baby steps in the right direction. So that's good. And, you know, the only other thing I want to talk about, if we have time here, is our activity committee, review committee, came together, and that was super exciting. We spent almost an hour and 45 minutes kind of established the guidelines. We as a district have a big target on our back as the one district that's well over the funding model. So we kind of set the parameters, we set the guidelines, some really people that are willing to do what's right. They understand that we need to take a look at this. So I'm excited to see as that moves forward what this committee comes up with recommendations to look for efficiencies.
So this committee is made up of who?
So we got stakeholders, we got coaches, we got ADs, we got district administration, we've got a couple board members on it. So we're really taking a look and comparing what we do, comparing to districts other sizes. I think I've referenced with you before, keeping up with the Joneses. That's sometimes what we compare ourselves to. You know, depending on what classification, well, this school gets this, how come we don't do this? Well, they're right, this school gets this, but where do they find the funds? Okay, so they don't have something that we do have, or how are they distributing it? Where are those efficiencies at? So kind of comes back to professional learning communities. You bring a group of people together, you look for efficiencies, and then you decide what's best for kids. And so that is just, again, a part of what a effective district should be doing and not making knee-jerk reactions. And I don't think this committee is looking to make knee-jerk reactions or, more importantly, point the finger. As a superintendent, I'm not going to point the finger and say, oh, bad this. We need to take a look and say, oh, guess what? We identified something different. One of the things that's come out, and I'll be as honest as I can here, is districts our size haven't been feeding meals to kids except for regional and state events. The one district that we compared to, they did this almost 4 years ago. There was a savings of $75,000. So when we're looking at efficiencies and we need to cut about $300,000 from our budget to kind of be normal with where other districts are, those are big chunks. We also have to say our new business manager, Connie, who is super awesome, feels that we really haven't been coding correctly for these state reports that are pulling this out. So there are some things we can clean up there. How do we fund this? Activity funding is also K-12, so it's not just athletics. It is could be everything from FFA, it could be speech and debate, it's going to be kindergarten field trip, it could be a fifth grade field trip. So all of those things are included in that. So when we say we have to take a look, we're not just looking at athletics, we're looking at all things that fall under activity funding, and that includes field trips.
And I want to circle back to one thing you said. You have not made any decisions with this committee yet. You mentioned lunches and dinners on field trips, or yeah. I mean not field trips, on activities. We don't know yet.
No, we don't know. But and thank you for clarifying. That's not the direction. But if we talk about, if I'm going to be as honest as I can, those are things that are popping up. Okay. However, as district level and as a board of trustees, we make decisions of what that looks like and what do we truly want to fund. So those are just things that kind of popped out real quick, saying, oh, well, here's a difference in how they approach things. It can be travel. You know, there's a lot of questions or concerns in the community. Well, why are we traveling all the way here? So it's just knowing the history. There's also that scheduling at the high school level, it sometimes is done 2 to 3 years in advance. Okay, not just here. And when you look at that and a team drops out, or for example, like South Dakota has changed their rules where you can't travel out of state for certain size schools. So you might have teams that are right across the border that are, you know, within an hour, and now you might have to travel 4 hours because things change. So those things, what do we control? What don't we control? Here's the other philosophy that our expectation I set forth with the committee. It's not based on opinion. It's based on facts. So we have to make recommendations. I want this committee to make recommendations based on the facts, not their personal opinions, and understand the complexity of this. So a lot of things, you can just make a phone call and set up a game. You can't, okay? Schools are now charging for use of facilities. I mean, there's a lot of great conversation. Well, let's just meet halfway. All right, well, communities, that means parents now have to travel halfway all the time because typically they come 1 year, you go 1 year. So you're trying to split it in half. So, but if we're going to find a neutral spot, that means that facility, finding a facility that's not being used, but more importantly, they're in the same boat we are. They don't have workers. And they can't fund like we used to say, oh, yeah, we're just part of a team. Well, it's costing them money. So now there's potentially a charge for that. Finding referees in that area. So referees are a shortage. Like right now, traveling in Colorado, they don't have enough referees. So games are being scheduled all over the place from Saturdays, Fridays to just canceling games because they don't have enough. Well, that's Wyoming's getting to that point, too, that our schedule is really now sometimes dependent on whether we can get a referee or not. So people will say, well, why are we playing at this time on this day? Why can't we have it at 8 o'clock in the morning? Well, because there's only so many people that will referee a game. So there's a lot of complexities that this committee is willing to listen to, and that's what excites me.
Well, there's a lot to talk about in education, and we will be back next week again to discuss more of the topics. And I just want to thank you, Charles, for meeting with us this morning. Charles Oskey, Superintendent of Schools at Johnson County District Number 1.
Have a great week, and I'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks.